At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Well, 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 they let us back in. Now, I am the greatest baseball fan ever. I've formerly played Major League Baseball and love the game of baseball, but I have to tell you, one time, one week in my entire life, 48 years on this earth, I had to deal with some hatred towards baseball. That was last week.
That was last week. Yeah.
They kicked us off the air for the Royals game. Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I mean,
and
I think,
we're back though.
That's the most important part is the fact that we're back. But I don't get the whole, you know, kicking us off the air. I believe that we're a lot more entertaining than, you know, sitting there watching baseball. I mean, I've never really been like a baseball fan, but
watch your mouth now.
You know what? I'm not even gonna go that far. But I'm gonna say this. Yeah. We are a lot more entertaining than watching a baseball game, that's for sure.
There we go. And that's Joe Mays, and I am Danon Hughes, and we are here on Players Only. And for the new listeners out there, it's a Players Only show that we just chop it up. What we talk about in the locker room, outside the locker room, as former players and only with former players, and we are joined today, and I'm so happy now. I'm a little bit, you know, resurrected because I got another offensive guy in here. Mark Bo Richter joins us.
What's up, fellas?
What's
how we doing?
Let me tell you, Bo, I have had to endure defensive guy after defensive guy after defensive guy sitting right in that chair where you are. I had to take some Pepto-Bismol after every show last season.
TMI.
So we are starting to string in some more offensive guys in here because there's just a better glow. I mean, there's just more energy. We don't have to deal with all the complaining and the cheating. I had to check my wallet when JC was in here last week. Because, you know, on DBs, they just like to pick your pocket and pull your shirt and do all that stuff. So I'm happy you're here, man.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Well, you know, on Players Only each week, what we do is we just talk about what random things happen on and off the field. Obviously, with the Chiefs being 3-0 right now, they're sitting pretty in a great position, especially with two of those games being on the road. And we'll get to that later. But what I want to talk about with you specifically, since you joined us, is just about your career. And tell us all, I know I'm not familiar with everything, and Joe definitely isn't. Tell us all about your way to the NFL.
Yeah, so I took a long road to the NFL. Really, I mean, I went to a small NAI school in Nebraska, Hastings College, which was, you know, three blocks away from my childhood home. My father was the athletic director there. That's not why I went there. I was a late bloomer. So as a sophomore in high school, I was still like 5'10".
Gotcha.
So my junior year is when I really sprouted up and then graduated. When I graduated, I was a tight end for our football team at Hastings High. It was about 6'3", 6'4", 185. And so I had a good frame, you know, I mean, from that standpoint. Went to Hastings College, got a lot of playing time as a freshman, basically starter from my sophomore year on, and had a really good junior year. And after that, got a little bit of interest just based on my size and everything else. And after had a tremendous senior season and in an option offense. Okay, so we didn't throw the ball like we do now, right? In the spread, which would have been fantastic back then. But and knew I just wanted to keep trying to play if I could. Whether that was the Arena League, you know, was in existence more so. I think it's still around, but not as, you know, it was a higher profile thing then. Canada, NFL, wherever. I just wanted a shot to see. And if it wasn't going to work out for me, not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'll just go find a job and do whatever, probably get into coaching or whatever from that standpoint. So
and then you went, what'd you go? You went 2 years in the, in Canadian football?
Yeah. So what happened is we had a guy on our staff who's from Canada originally. And I mean, he'd been in Hastings for like 30 some years.
Yeah.
But he made a few calls, to some folks up there, and the NFL draft came and went. And in the meantime, I'd gone to Chicago to work out with the speed coach and all this other kind of stuff, just to get myself ready. One of those regional combines you pay like $350 to, you know, in Chicago. And did all that and had great numbers. And you know, was on the radar of a couple NFL teams to possibly be an undrafted free agent. But we all know, I mean, I shouldn't say we all, but you guys know that if you don't get that call by the sixth, seventh round, possibly on things, you
it's
know,
you're probably be a free agent.
Yeah, it's
right.
probably
That's right.
be a free agent. It's probably, you know, not going to happen for you. So a couple days after the draft, I still hadn't got a call. And I went to Dallas, Texas and worked out at a regional invite only deal for the Calgary Stampeders. And it went really well. And they called 2 days later and wanted to sign me. For, you know, whopping $37,000 a year. And I said, let's go.
There you go.
So flew up to Canada, a couple weeks later and then, had a great rookie season. So that was kind of the start of, my football career and how I got into the pro game.
There you go.
So
the Chiefs, I'm sure, called later, a little bit later, and you were able to make it to the NFL. Now, Joe, this is one stat I do know about Bo that you may not know. He holds the actual record for the longest pass play in Chiefs history.
And really? NFL history, yeah.
In NFL history, it can never be broken.
That's right. It's 99 yards. It can never be broken. All
I remember watching that.
That's
and
awesome.
I also hold still the rookie record for touchdown receptions in a season for the Chiefs as well, with 8.
Yes.
Which are the only 8 that I scored here. But I'll take it.
Hey, well, it was great watching you. Obviously, when I watch games, my eyes gravitate to the wide receivers and those cheating guys on the other side of the line of scrimmage and how you work. So I remember your speed. I remember your length. I remember you being that blue collar guy. And that's one thing I think all three of us have in common is that we were not the high draft, choices, not the, you know, the so-called blue chip or big money guys, truly blue collar guys that basically did whatever it took to stay on the field and keep our careers. You know, what's interesting, I started thinking about this show and you know, what I wanted to talk about with you guys, because we come from a variety of different places, is, you know, when did, like, for me, I always ask myself, when did I know I could make it? You know, I went to the University of Iowa, played in the Rose Bowl, played in, you know, 4 bowls in 5 years, obviously played on national TV against great teams like Michigan and Ohio State every year and so on and so forth. But I always wonder, I think back, I'm like, you know, when did I know that I could play at this next level? Because where I grew up in Jersey, we didn't have any pro athletes, barely had some college athletes as far as football is concerned, especially going away. So there was no one that I could look up to that I saw working out at the local gym or down at the park or something like that and say, hey, I can be like him. So for you guys to come from North Dakota State and Hastings College, you know, was there a time where you actually can remember looking in the mirror and saying, you know, this, I know I can make it. I know I can get to that level.
You know what? That's kind of tough because I'd never, so let me start out by saying this. Playing in the NFL, that was never a dream of mine because, you know, me playing football, that was more so my escape from getting out of the city of Chicago. You know, and being able to go off to school and get an education and get it paid for. Like that was most everything for me. But, you know, just going out there and learning the game and playing the game and being around the coaches, you know, mentors, you know, they were able to show me everything I needed to know. And by the time my sophomore year came around, you know, my coaches start telling me, like, you got the look of a, you know, NFL linebacker. You know, if you keep it up, if you keep on going, if you keep playing well, if you keep, you know, studying hard and taking care of your business, you can make it. But I didn't really necessarily have, I didn't think that I could make it until maybe my senior year, because I wasn't really focused on it. I was focused on, you know, playing with my guys and, you know, continuing to build that camaraderie. So that was just something that, you know, the NFL just so happened came, and, you know, I was able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and you know what? Everybody has their own story, mm-hmm. and how they got to where they got to, and how we can be still, how we can still have this platform, and you know, obviously achieve our goals. And for me, I was a baseball guy. I played professional baseball before the Chiefs. I played college baseball for 4 years and got drafted, and then I was very, you know, obviously extremely blessed to have the Chiefs draft me after that. So, growing up, didn't see any baseball players, didn't see any football players, just knew I loved the game and didn't know how to work out, didn't have an organized weightlifting program in our schools, and, you know, some dysfunction that was out there. We had a lot of great athletes, but, no real organization in regards to it being a pipeline to get to the next level. They're much better now. Shout out to Bayonne High School and Bayonne, New Jersey. But definitely different back then. Bo, I know yours is very unique. You already started with that story. But after we come from break, I want to touch on your story in that aspect. But there's also a difference. There's a major difference in this in this booth right now.
Oh, definitely.
There's a big difference.
There's
yes.
two wide receivers, but one of them is not like the other. He's a white wide receiver that played in the NFL. I want to tackle that next. All right, we're back. Players Only back. Segment two with the fellas, Mark Bo Richter, Joe Mays, and myself, Danon Hughes. And we left off after Joe Mays's story on when he knew and if there was a time where he knew when he was going to make it in the NFL. And Bo, you obviously have a very unique story coming from NAIA football and climbing the ladder through the Canadian Football League and to the Chiefs in 2002 to 2005. Spent some great years there, record-breaking years, especially in your rookie year. But the one thing when I invited you on and I was thinking about some topics, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so there was the Chris Collinsworths and the Steve Largents, you know, big-time names, big-time receivers, white receivers. And then there seemed to be kind of a decade or so of time where you didn't really see very many wide receivers, especially during my years. Now you can talk about the Amendolas and the Edelmans and you know, Hogan and several guys, you know,
Adam Thielen.
Cup, you know, Thielen, you know, yeah. There are a lot of top shelf wide receivers who happen to be white. Not that's never an issue in the locker room. I'm sure it's never outside of maybe some trash talking that goes on the field that you can speak to,
yeah.
that I can't speak to. But first, when you knew that you could make it in the NFL, when you knew that you could be a player in the NFL, and then the impact of being what many people would say a white receiver during that time.
Yeah, I think for me, coming out of a small NAIA school, you know, I mentioned before, I just wanted to be able to play, right, and thought I could play at a different level. My first game in the CFL, I was backing up Alan Pitts, who at the time was like the Jerry Rice of the CFL, mm-hmm. held every single record.
I remember the name, yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't play the first preseason game because he was like 33 years old at the time, right? He probably was older than that, actually, at the time. 35, maybe.
He was a Satchel Paige?
Yeah. I mean, he's on that at that spot. But he was a legend, right?
Yeah.
And so the very first pass I received in the first preseason game, I took like 55 yards to the house. And I think it was at that point that I was like, okay, I can, you know. For me, it was about proving to myself, I think, that I could play at a higher level.
Yep.
And once that happened, I was like, okay, I belong here, right? After playing at the NAIA level, I dominated 5'7" defensive backs on the outside, you know, at 6'3". You just don't know until you actually get to that point and see it. So I think at that point for me, it was when I knew I was going to have a shot at some point, whether it was going to be in the CFL the whole time or whether it was going to be in the NFL. And then when I got here to Kansas City, I came into a great situation because Tony Gonzalez was holding out all through like OTAs for a new contract. And so I got immersed in the offense of running a lot of the routes that he ran because I was a bigger wide receiver. And so, you know, from then, from that point, you know, I had a ton of interest around the league. I chose to come here. I took less money to come here than to go to Indianapolis and catch passes from Peyton Manning.
Any regrets?
Not really, because, I mean, you can always look at the rearview mirror and go, what was I thinking? But during my free agency period, before I came and signed with Kansas City, Indianapolis had Marvin Harrison. They had Reggie Wayne had just been drafted the year before in the first round. Jerome Payton was still there. He was a free agent, but they made no bones that they wanted him back.
Stokely
came, right around that same time, I think, or the year or so after. So, for me, it was about opportunity. And here, you know, Sly Morris had just torn up his knee again.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Kennison had only been here for 3 or 4 games at the end of the 2001 season. Dante Hall was still a running back, converting to wide receiver at the time. I think, who else was there? Larry Minnis Parker. Parker was here, but Snoop Minnis was, you know, a fourth-round pick the year before.
Mm-hmm.
There was more opportunity, I felt, for me to challenge to get on the field here. And then I had appendicitis the second or third day of training camp my rookie year, so I didn't play in almost all the preseason games. But it was the Jacksonville game during, like, the third game of the regular season, and I was suited up for every single game and played a lot of special teams, of course. But I made a catch over top of, I think, Donovan Darius, like, in a two-minute situation, and that was, I think, my moment when I'm like, okay, this is real, you know, for me, type of thing.
Very cool. Sure.
Did you get hit by him?
He didn't. Yeah. Oh, Donovan he didn't get taken out.
No, I didn't get taken out. I went over top. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Head was on a swivel. Yes. With him out there.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
So now you're a white wide receiver in the NFL. I'm sure there's some spicy stories, but just generally speaking, the dynamic of it.
Yeah, you know, I'm deceptively fast, right?
You got all the tags.
Sound like Mayock already.
You know, deceptively fast. You know, run great routes. You know, all those different things that come into the tagline of being a white dude that plays wide receiver in the National Football League. No, it's funny. I say it's funny, but, you know, growing up in Nebraska, we always got the Chiefs games first at noon, mm-hmm. right, with the regional coverage. And then we always got the Broncos. So, like, the comparisons for me and McCaffrey all the time, right? Because he was the one guy you talked about, you know, the Collinsworth and the Steve Largents mm-hmm. and those types of guys. But Easy Ed was the guy in the 90s, from a white receiver standpoint that was making a lot of plays. And so the part that cracks me up is – you never get a white wide receiver ever compared to any other receiver in the league except for a white guy.
I was just thinking
that. That's the part that cracks me up. Because, like, for me, as a bigger dude, it was, okay, he's like Ed McCaffrey. Or then it was like, he's like Joe Jurevicius was. Like, because Joe Jurevicius from Penn State.
Giants, yep.
That sort of thing. Those are like, why? Because we're big 6'3", 220-pound dudes. Like, and we're white? That's the only comparison it could be?
You guys use the same hair gel.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been it. I don't know. It's just, and I still laugh at it, you know, and you know this, but I mean, with me on Twitter and stuff, I still laugh at everything that's out there because it is, you will never see a white guy that plays wide receiver in the National Football League compared to any other wide receiver, ever.
Yeah.
No matter what happens. I always try to find a comp, and there was a guy, there was a reporter in Green Bay in 2006 when I was there that actually did a story on the white wide receivers and came up and started talking to me. And I'm like, and he's like, I'm doing this story on white wide receivers around the National Football League. And I looked at him like he was crazy. Like, I can't believe we're sitting in an NFL locker room and we're doing a story on white wide receivers, you know, type of thing. But he talked about it being like this little fraternity of guys because there weren't a lot of us.
Uh-huh.
So Drew Bennett was in Tennessee at the time, and I think he had 1,200 or 1,300 yards like the year before. Didn't go to the Pro Bowl. Myself, Brian Finneran, big wide receiver, played for the Falcons.
Yep.
I know I missed Stokely was in, you know, shorter guy.
Short, quick, agile.
In terms of size-wise compared to us. But, you know, there wasn't very many of us on that side of things. So it's interesting. But, yeah, I mean, my favorite all-time piece with this is, like, when we're playing, right? You're in the game, and I'm running a 9 route on the outside, okay? and I beat the dude by like three steps, you know, and I don't get the ball because it's going to 88 instead of me, yeah, right, during my time, which is fine. But the look on the guy's face where you're like, man, you're fast for white dude. You know, like, I'm like, I ran a 4.43, yeah, okay, in the 40. Like, you know, it is, yeah, I can fly, you know. That's the biggest stigma, I think, you know, yeah, is whether, you know, you must have been pretty fast. Well, yeah, I was. But I was just as fast as all the other guys.
Yep.
But just because I was a bigger white dude, and at 200, 225 pounds, I'm kind of a
hybrid.
Kind of a hybrid, so I kind of look like a tight end. And, you know, we get in the huddle next to Gonzalez. I'm not 250 pounds, but I'm not that far off from him,
right,
you know. And then when I stand next to Dante, who's like 5'8", I do look like a tight end,
yeah,
you know, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, I heard all the comparisons and the, you know, stigma on it and all that piece. And I laugh with it and have a great time with it because it does always crack me up as to, you know, white wide receivers get this stigma of, you know, they're shifty, they're quicker than they are fast, they're deceptively fast, all that kind of stuff.
And the trash talk on the field.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
Joe, you were one of those guys. Did you talk? You I think you referenced that you didn't really talk a whole bunch on that.
Nah, man, I was never much of a talker. I just wanted to go out there and hit somebody. And if I ran into guys that talk, that's when I started opening up my mouth. You know what I mean? Because I felt like they asked for that. But then, you know, I would talk trash to them, and then I would hit them again the next play.
Yeah.
And I would say, I'm hoping y'all run the same play again.
Yeah.
Because then me and you gonna get a chance to see each other
again.
And
see, I talked from the jump. I had to engage. I had to feel like it was a game within the game for me, that I needed to get into your brain. And as crazy as it sounds, I love winning. Winning was obviously the most important thing. But a very, very, very close second was knowing that I got you.
Right.
And how I was going to get you was I was going to talk to you all game long. Cut block, crack back, didn't matter. Whatever rules were allotted to us as wide receivers, I was going to do. It didn't matter. And but I needed to know that you heard me. I needed to know that you wondered if I broke the huddle. If I was in the huddle and we broke the huddle, I needed to know that you knew that I was on your side of the field. Because I didn't have the 4.4 speed like Bo Richter. I didn't have the, you know, I wasn't a deep throw. I was just a physical receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But so I talked from the get-go.
Was
from,
it only
from
to corners?
Opening kickoff. I'm on kickoff. I'm the kicker. I'm the special teams captain. So I'm out at the coin toss. And, you know, I'm not shaking hands with you. I, you know, that's my mindset. It was on tilt from the beginning. But, you know, Bo, you talked about, like, what is your response? So you got DBs that are saying this, so I know I talk trash, and I'm waiting for responses. What was your response?
Yeah, I was not much of a talker, really, in terms of talking trash at all. Like, yeah. I really wasn't until somebody started talking to me. You know, I was more like I would wait, and being a white dude, I kind of love the fact, as a white receiver, that you can blow by a guy because it's like he's going to talk,
yeah,
and then I blow by him, and it's like, okay, this white dude just ran right by you. You know,
he kind of clams up.
Yeah, then he clams up after that. So that... I kind of try to let my, you know, my game do the talking in some of that capacity. But, yeah, I mean, I've heard it all, you know, out there. And you know, we live in a world now where things aren't still what they should be, right?
Yeah,
in terms
exactly.
And we can joke about it in here because we're, you know, we know what's going on. But, and I don't want to call it like a reverse piece to that, but there is that stigma as a white wide receiver, the reverse aspect of like, this guy can't really play at all or whatever. And then you go out and catch, you know, 4 for 85 on him in a touchdown, and it's like, okay, this dude can play, you know, type of thing. So I used to just relish in the fact that if I was going to get mine and get by him on things or have a day, that my, you know, my play was going to do the talking. But I, you know, Dana was the guy, you know, that never shut up. So you were just like, man, would this dude ever just shut up?
Go figure. And I'm right here on the microphone.
We're down 17 points and Dana's still out there talking, you know, type of thing. Those are the guys that I used to like. I mean, I didn't play with Dana, but that's the type of guy, you know, out there on the field that I used to love to beat those guys and just shut up, you know?
Yeah, you're losing. How are you losing and still talking?
So 60 minutes on the clock, man.
Yeah.
I got a whole bunch of words that can go in 60 minutes with all the commercials, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the trash talking, like, for me, it wasn't specific to one position either. It was to whoever. So it could be the fullbacks, the tight ends.
Yeah.
The best was the offensive linemen because they look at me as an underdog. I'm small. Like,
small, yeah,
you know, 5'10", 5'11", 245. Like they think they can really just move me out of the way, but I had leverage. and I was able to get underneath that face mask. And then, you know, I knew, I mean, I was taught how to play the game nasty and dirty too whenever you're inside them trenches, because it's no such thing as a clean place. No such thing as, you know, just doing what you, I mean, at the end of the day, you only needed to do what you needed to do in order to beat the block and make a play. Like that was my only focus. And, you know, I would grab a face mask or two. I would do certain things that would, you know, make them mad so that they come and they say things. And then now I know I have you. Now they playing with 10. I got you. Oh. I got your attention. You got my attention. Man. So whenever you're focused on, whenever y'all running a different play and you're looking at me, but you got another job you're supposed to do.
Got him.
I know I got you.
Got him.
Yeah. I mean, and that was perfect. I enjoyed doing that.
Bruh. I could tell you stories. Mm-hmm. If this was not public airwaves, special teams, poking eyes, kicking guys, grabbing, you know what, whatever you want to call it.
Man,
in
look.
The scrum when there's a fumble on the ground and special teams, forget about it. I mean, that's to me, that's what the game was about. And if there's an aspect of the game that I missed afterwards, it was probably that physical part of the game. You know, and I don't know about you, Bo, but when I was in the locker room, when we watched the film on Monday, catching the ball, guys that caught the ball and had big plays, yeah, you know, they get a little opera clap. Yeah, nice play, blah, blah, blah. Somebody de-cleat somebody, chop them down, open up a big hole for a running back, Marcus Allen or Greg Hill or whomever to run through, and you got a key block down the field, crack backing on a safety or a whack back on a linebacker, you know, standing 40 pounds less than them, and you got that. I'm up and I'm cheering like I'm in Arrowhead Stadium. That's just my mindset. The catching part was the easy part. If you wear a number 80 jersey, you're supposed to be able to catch.
Right.
That's the glory piece, right?
Yeah,
that's the glory piece.
All the other
doing all
dirty
the dirty
stuff.
Work. Yeah, doing all the dirty work.
Down and dirty stuff is what really jumps out to me. Talking about down and dirty, when we come back from break, we're going to talk about this Chiefs team and what we've seen. We weren't on air last week after the Raider game. And now we're right after the Ravens game. I want to talk about the down and dirty aspect of this Chiefs team being 3-0. All right, guys, we're back. Segment 3 of Players Only. And that last segment, that's what the genesis about this show is about. That's why, you know, the brainchild behind this show, you know, what came to my mind is, you know, chopping it up about stuff that the general fan doesn't know unless they know us personally, our neighbors, maybe family, friends, people who we work with, that we can have that lunchtime conversation and we open up. We open up with each other. It's automatic, but everyone else, we're kind of guarded about what we say and the stories we tell and so on. And there's just dynamics that we would never know about, or the general fan would never know about, unless we share them. So that's what was always behind the Players Only, is that we have this forum to chat and open up the eyes and ears of people that are out there. And one other aspect that the eyes and ears are open, especially over this last year, but now so in this 2019 season, is this Chiefs team.
Yeah.
And 3-0 with two away games to start the season off. There's times, and you guys have been on teams, and I've been on teams where, you know, one year of mine, we were 13-3, but prior to the season, we were picked fifth in the AFC West, and there was only four teams. So, there's times where you are underrated, and then there's times where you may be overrated. This is one of the very few teams, maybe during your years with Priest and that great offense with Willie Rofe and Will Shields and Trent and everybody, and obviously Tony, where you guys were anticipated to be very good and you wind up living up to that. But this year, especially after last season and how it ended in the AFC Championship, this team was expected to be good, and they're showing themselves to even be better than I think what most people experience. Going back to that Raider game, you know, what did you guys take away? Obviously, it was a trash type of game when you're playing on a baseball/football field. Mm-hmm. I always hated that. Played on it with Miami when we went down to Miami, when we went out to Oakland. And I think there was another team that had a baseball/football field. Oh, San Diego.
Yeah.
Back then. San Diego back then. But that Raider game, what did it tell you about this team, if anything different?
They were just getting started. You know, they started out very slow that first quarter, and then second quarter they came and they rang on 28 unanswered.
Yeah.
So I think that it just shows that they just needed to get in rhythm, and once they got in rhythm, it's hard to stop them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be the running theme for the entire season. You know, if you any team that they play, if you can't stop the offense, you're going to be in a battle, because these guys, they're going to put points up. It's way too many weapons on the team, you know, for them to not, you know, at least score 28 points a game. And I mean, that's at the very least.
Yeah. And what'd you think? And with that slow start, were you freaking out at all?
Not at all.
I know. I mean, that was, that's different. That's kind of different. I kind of felt different that I wasn't freaking out either.
Yeah.
Past years.
I think the difference is number 15. Yeah. Right, quarterback. Yeah. Your quarterback situation is different. That, not that Alex Smith was a bad quarterback or anything like that. It's just a different vibe.
Yeah.
Like when they struggle a little bit like they did in the first quarter against Oakland, and they're off offensively, and they're just, you know, it's the timing's just not there. They're just a little bit off. You know, it goes back to 2 years ago when they played the Giants up. I think the Chiefs played the Giants up in New York, where it was like a, what was it, like a 10-7 ball game or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just ugly. Mm-hmm. They got it off to an awful start offensively. Like, they're never going to get in rhythm. That's just how it was. It's a different vibe. You're just like, okay, there's a lot of game left here. We've seen him come from behind. We've seen him play from way in front. I think the thing for me, just, and I know we'll get into the Ravens game, but from the Raiders game, is starting off the year, and I know this week they're on the road again, but three out of your first four are on the road.
Yeah.
It's hard in this. You guys know this. It's hard in this league to win on the road, no matter who you're playing.
No matter
it's
where you go.
It's so hard. You never apologize for whenever, but if you can... You never apologize for a win on the road, however ugly it can be or whatever. They went out and just got – they took care of business in the second quarter and blew it open in that Raiders game. And then we're basically able to kind of just coast it to victory and leave some plays in their pocket that they didn't want to show yet from that side of things. And you know, it's against a division rival. And anytime you can win against a division rival is always a plus as well.
Now, as a wide receiver, I know I've been asked a lot, how would it feel to catch – passes from Patrick Mahomes and be on the field with Patrick Mahomes? You obviously had the luxury of playing with a great quarterback here in Trent Green. I played with Joe Montana and Rich Gannon, great quarterbacks, and Steve Bono and Elvis Gerback were really good and really cool too. But this guy, I mean,
special, man.
Yeah,
to know that you can come out of the locker room, and I laugh at the fact of, you know, there are wide receivers, very talented wide receivers on this team. They're going to make a lot of money because of the guy that's throwing them the ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, future, their careers, the longevity in their careers are going to extend 3 or 4 years, and the guaranteed money that they're going to get is going to be extended because of number 15. And when I was playing, you know, we would talk to other receivers on vacation, on the off season of other teams, and you say, hey, man, number 4, that Favre guy. Or, Peyton Manning came at towards the latter part of my career, but there were great quarterbacks, Bledsoe and, you know, Aikman was still around and so on. And you hear these guys rave about them. And, you know, yeah, we're raving about Joe Montana during that time too, but to see how these guys are producing and to see the command, I mean, how lovely would it have been to be a wide receiver with Patrick Mahomes?
It would have been fantastic.
It's like Christmas, like, every day.
Yes.
Christmas.
And I played with a really good quarterback in Trent Green.
Yeah.
Like, really good pro bowler during my time here. The thing that stands out to me about Patrick Mahomes is that, and Dayton, you know this as a receiver and Joe having to defend us on this stuff, is the way he extends plays and with his arm strength, and it's a flick of the wrist. Like, you are never dead as a receiver in your route, ever. And you can take your go route and turn it into a post on the broken play in the scramble drill, and he's just going to throw you away from the coverage, clear to the other side of the field. Like, everything is available to you.
Yeah.
That's right. The part to me that so many broken plays and different things happen with him that he can extend and keep plays alive and then just heave the ball out there and let you go get it.
Yep. It's a luxury, man, and I think these players will recognize that they might be a little spoiled right now, but if there's ever a time where somebody else has to jump in, they'll recognize, whoa, what number 15 brought to the table is totally different, totally unique than anything that they've ever experienced. And you talk about broken plays, there's a somewhat of a broken organization that they're about to play this week in the Detroit Lions. But there's a little bit of concern. I don't know if it comes into your mind as well. It's a little bit of concern when you play against teams that you are decisively better than and you're going on the road. And Bo, you talked about the difficulty of winning on the road. What do you guys feel about this Lions team? Am I the only one that's a little concerned?
Yeah, probably, yes. I'm not necessarily concerned because I know that these guys, they're well coached. I mean, you know, any team that's coached by Andy Reid is going to be a well coached team, and they're going to go into the games well prepared. So I'm not worried about that. The one part that I do worry about is the defense. And I know it's early in the season. You know, I know they still have some things that they have to, some wrinkles they have to iron out. But that's the only thing is that, you know, having a defense that can stop, you know, the offense from scoring and you know, being able to get the ball back as many times, to the offense as possible. That's truly important. And so far it hasn't been that. And once again, I know it's early in the season. I know that's going to come. So it's not necessarily a concern, but you do want to see them play better.
I'm not really as concerned this week as I am the following week against Indianapolis with that big physical offensive line that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Chiefs defense got out physical this week. And, you know, part of that is that's Baltimore's game, running three tight ends and slamming Mark Ingram up in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised they didn't do it more even when they were down a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, defensively, I thought they just got out physical this past week.
Yeah.
Now, the Lions aren't that type of team. But they're hot right now. They are undefeated. They tied, you know, against Arizona, and it is on the road. And, you know, I don't think the Lions have been in this position for a while with this good a start. So that part, you know, Dick Vermeil had the old adage when I played is you keep losing, teams losing, right? Now,
yeah.
They're a winning team right now, but they traditionally have not been a winning team. You've got to go take care of business of those teams you should play or you should beat.
Yep. You know what? It's still going to concern me a little bit just because we're decisively better, but I get it. They're a team that is on the uprise, and I'm sure in their locker room, they're talking about this is our coming out party. This is our opportunity as an undefeated team to show that we are a force in the NFC and not just in the NFC, but in the NFL. But after this break, we're going to talk about our careers, career longevity. Obviously, we have the luxury of having a Patrick Mahomes that we hope to be here for 15 more years.
Yeah.
But sometimes the career is not as long as we'd like it to be. So we're going to talk about our guys and our experiences in that, guys. And, you know, did we get off the field when we wanted to? All right, guys, we're back. They haven't kicked us out yet.
Not yet.
We got in some Chiefs, current Chiefs talk and where they are now at 3-0. But, Bo, before we get into the careers and longevity and when things end, you mentioned something, and I've been talking about it all week, about the Ravens and their game plan against the Chiefs. It is hilarious to me, and I kind of feel like this is one of the first times that we've experienced this in Chiefs Kingdom, where you know for a fact, you've been in a defensive locker room, you've been in a meeting room with game plans on defenses. We have both been in offensive meeting rooms putting together game plans for opponents. It's hilarious to me that we know the exact game plan that a team is going to try to employ on the field, and you can see, physically see, when the game changes over, when they go away from their game plan because of that kid in the 15 jersey. And you brought it up, Mark, when you talked about the Ravens run game.
Yeah.
All week long, I would bet my house on it that John Harbaugh talked about running the ball, keeping the ball, time of possession on their side of the field, and imposing their will on this Chiefs defense, and at the end of the game, wearing them down to a victory. And yet, Lamar Jackson, 52 pass attempts, I believe, in the game, the most of his entire career. Why? Because there was another guy on the other side of the field with a number 15 jersey that John Harbaugh and that offensive staff figured out, we better start trying to throw the ball and getting big plays and putting more points on the board. That's the impact that he has that makes it so funny for me as a player, a former player, because I know, you know, I mean, we hear about the coaches that sleep in their locker room. We've had those coaches that, you know, stay in there 20 hours a day, barely see their family, putting together this intricate game plan that we're supposed to go out and do. And then to know that those players have been conditioned like we have, and maybe about 40 minutes into the game, 40 literal minutes, maybe in the first quarter, that game plan changes, and now we're going to go in a shootout because of 15.
It does. I think when you look at this game the past week with them going for it on fourth down early on,
They won't do that again this season.
They won't. And it was a situation where it was like, we're going to come in and do what we do, and we're going to go for it here on fourth and short. And the first two-point conversion, I get it, because there was a penalty. So you're moving the ball half the distance to go on the one. You might as well give it a shot. The thing to me, but you're right about the feel of when a game starts to change. And Baltimore wanted to come in and run the football, wear the Chiefs down, and then take some shots over the top to Hollywood Brown, you know, hit their tight ends and intermediate routes. They took him out of that game plan. And when Lamar Jackson's throwing it over 50 times a game, that's not what they want to do. You took away the Chiefs' defense. I mentioned they got out physical, but they took away the identity, though, enough in that game.
Of the Ravens,
mm-hmm. that it didn't matter.
Yeah, that's true. And I've been in games where you clearly see the game plan start to change. And you know what? You playing against a running team, but they're forcing them to throw the ball. Like, it's basically you seeing blood in the water. From a defensive standpoint, because now you have to throw the ball. I'm going to get after you.
Well,
like,
one of the darkest days of my career was playing the Indianapolis Colts in the playoffs after the 95 season when we were 13-3, and we started throwing the ball. After running the ball, I think we ran for over 100 yards in the first half. Jim Harbaugh is a quarterback. Captain Comeback is a quarterback for the Colts, and we started to throw the ball with Steve Bono in the second half. That's one of the games that jumps out to me, and I'm sure a lot of Chiefs fans that are still sickened by that great team in 95 that we went away from a game plan to try to put more points on the board when it was minus 11 degrees and we were running the ball at will. But so going back to our original point about longevity and our careers, you guys, obviously we have different spans of our career, Canadian League to the NFL, back to the Canadian League. Was there a time where you guys started to contemplate your career, whether it's draft time, off season, OTAs when other receivers or other linebackers are coming into play, nursing back from an injury? Did you, just like I asked earlier, where was there a time where we knew we could make it? Was there a time where you knew it was over, where you knew that you were done?
Yeah, I'd never been cut before in my life until 2006 with Green Bay. Okay, and after the second preseason game. Now, I was on a flight to Indianapolis at 6 o'clock the next morning, you know, to sign with the Colts and played 2 days later in their preseason game. And then as a vested veteran, got to talk to that, hey, we're going to bring you back to play some special teams. And they got three corners hurt in the first 2 weeks, and I knew that was out the window, mm-hmm. right? And then several workouts that year. And then in 2007, I knew the CFL was always going to be an option for me to go back up there. And so I did and didn't get off to a great start that year. Got released, got picked up by Toronto, within a week's time frame. And then after that year, still had some other opportunities, was going to have to take a pay cut, and it was fine. But I looked at it and said, you know, I've been cut 3-4 times in the last year and a half. That wears on you mentally, man, because you know you can still play in a lot of ways, but at the same time, you're like, okay, people are telling me I can't play anymore, potentially. And all the time and effort and everything that goes into getting yourself ready to play physically and then mentally, it was at that point in 06, 07, and now looking back on it, I think in 07, one of the reasons I got cut is I got off to a bad start. I was sulking a little bit more because I just wasn't there mentally. And I looked at it and said, you know, I played for 8 years professionally coming out of an high school. Not bad.
Yeah,
you know,
bad
I'm all right with that. I'd have signed up for 1 year in the CFL, you know, looking back on it. So at that point, at 30, walking away fairly healthy with only one torn up knee, I was like, okay, I'm comfortable with walking away from this.
It's cool to ride off in the sunset with that.
Yeah. But I mean, let's be real. Like, I was pushed out the door though.
Yeah.
We die twice, right? Yes. When we die, but then the first time we die as athletes is when our career's over.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to say I knew it was over with 2016 after the previous season. I wasn't recovering. My body wasn't coming back the way that it normally do. I had been out for maybe 2 months to that time, and my knee was still bothering me like bad. And normally it takes me about a month for me to recover back, but you know it was taking a long time. And then I realized I had to have surgery, and then two surgeries within a 6 week span. That's when I knew, I'm like, I'm not too sure too many people can come back from this type of trauma to their body.
To play at this level.
Yeah. I mean, and this was on my knee. Yeah. So I knew, you know, being able to run and being quick and agile, I needed those things. And to not be able to do that, it was crushing. And I knew the time was over. But in my mind, in my head, I knew I could still play. I still kind of talk like that to this day and feel like that to this day.
Yeah, but, absolutely. I mean, yeah. It just doesn't automatically go away. For me, mm-hmm. you know, there was things that happened in my career that kind of propelled me. Every year while I was here, they drafted a receiver in the third or fourth round or earlier. You know, you had Lake Dawson, Chris Penn, you had Joe Horn, Tamarc Vanover. It seemed like year in and year out, they were trying to bring somebody in to replace me and be drafted that way. So there was a vested interest in that. So that kind of propelled me. But then as the career goes on, just like Bo, you talking about, you start to realize, okay, I think I can still do this, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And I came to peace with it when I was with the Saints for a preseason, mm-hmm. and Mike Ditka made me captain and then cut me the next week before the season started. I was like, okay, man, you know, now I'm done with this because now I'm starting to get frustrated with it. It's not just about what's happening
on the field. It's the frustration
sets in. The business side and so on. So, you know what, guys? This is a great, great segment, a great, great time for you guys to be in the studio. Obviously, every week we're here, Thursday nights, 6 to 7, players only. A different guest will come in, but, Bo, you may be invited back later in the season. And we appreciate you coming out, man. But
thanks.
Players only, make sure you tune in each week. We'll be chopping it up. And hopefully next week, after another victory for the Chiefs against the Lions, we'll be able to dissect that game and what the Chiefs do against Matthew Stafford up there in Detroit. Thanks for coming out, Joe Mays, Mark Bo Richter. We'll be back with you next week.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes, subject to driver availability. More terms apply.